Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/know-how to save 20% off any order. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second-generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping to the United States or Canada, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code KNOWHOW. Today on KNOWHOW...
Turn your Raspberry Pi into an access point, discover what's on your network, a report from CES...
And I got a question for you. Do you feel lucky? Well, do you? Welcome to Know-How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be cracking open the knowledge thing you got up on the top of your head and pouring in all the good stuff. That's kind of what we do.
Delicious. Yeah.
Delicious, delicious knowledge. Now, you may have noticed that we kind of busted out some Punish props at the beginning. We're going to be playing at the end of the show with a little preview of a project that the two of us are working on. We've got some laser tag, we've got some Nerf action going on, but beyond that, we've got your feedback. As promised, we're trying to be much better about this, so we're bringing in your questions from our Google Plus page so we can answer the pressing questions.
And there's a lot of questions.
Actually, hey, kudos to you. You've been putting some really good questions in the Google Plus group. Thank you very much. Let's go and kick it off. We've got one from a perennial favorite, longtime member of our know-it-all community, Red Dog.
He writes, I started a search for a software integration program to show all the information about the devices on my network. My search returned some results, but my nerve ending stood on high alert as I started reading about the options within some software available. I was turned off by Wireshark and its complexity. No disrespect intended to Wireshark community. Decided a better road travel would be asking, has anyone had any experience with this type of software and the trust level from usage?
Great question. And I understand you went to Wireshark because we showed you how powerful Wireshark is. But here's the thing. That's not really the tool that you want to use for network interrogation. So when you're doing network interrogation, you're essentially asking the question, what's here? What's active? What devices do I have? Because that's the first step in figuring out, do I have to secure this device? Does it have any ports open? Is it insecure? Is it going to get owned because for some reason it's being forwarded off to the entire internet? Yeah. So, not Wireshark.
Yeah. Or are there any devices on your network you don't know about?
That's a very good one. Exactly. Oh, wow, I've got an extra access point. I didn't know about that. Actually, as an IT person, that's one of the things we always look for. We call them rogue APs. It's so and so with like the airport extreme comes into the office and says, you know what? I hate having to be at my desk. I want to be on the other side of my office. So I'm going to plug in an AP and everything will be good. Yep, we don't like that. It's called a security hole. That's bad. But thankfully, Wireshark is not the software that you should be using. Wireshark is really a packet capture. It's a way to look at the stream of data. That's not what you want. You want network interrogation. And luckily, there are free options. The first one I'm going to show you is, well, it's easy because it runs on your mobile device. And it works on both iOS and Android. So rejoice all those people who lament non-cross-platform compatibility. It's called Fing. And if you go to that link there, it's Fing Network Tools. It's free. There is a pro version, which will give you, more information about your network, more tools, but it's an incredibly powerful piece of software. If you go to the overhead, Burke, let me show you what it looks like. So this is Fing on my OnePlus One here. I'm connected to the Twit guest network. So these are all the devices on the Twit network right now. Oh, at least the guest network. And the nice thing about this is, notice this is information that it got just from a scan that probably took about 45 to 50 seconds. It'll tell us about the cameras we've got on this network, about the mobile devices that might be connected. We know that from Amazon, from Lighthouse, we know that here's my OnePlus OnePlus 5. We've got a couple other devices here I don't know about, but then I can drill in. So if I want to know about this clock, I think I'm pretty sure this is the clock that Leo has, the ticker tape thing. It will show you IP address. It will show you MAC address. It will show you who made that particular adapter and who that address is assigned to. But it will also let you do things like scanning services. So I can find what ports are open on this particular one. And it tells me I've got SSH open, HTTP open, I've got secure HTTP open, Unical, a proxy port, 8080, that's very popular, and 38292, which is probably some weird querying API port that it's got open. So this is what's cool about this. This is so simple. I can have it on my device, either Android or iOS. I can find immediately what's on the network, and then if I have a question, I can go, oh, wait, what's that? And you know, take a deeper dive. This is probably my favorite piece of software because, again, free, super fast, super easy to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you want is you want to be able to go into any network that you're currently connected to, be it home or Starbucks, and just poke around. I mean, don't send too much traffic because that's kind of rude. But, you know, for free software, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there is another piece of software that I want to give you if you want to get a bit more serious. Fing is nice, but in order to get some of the deeper scans, you have to buy the pro version. Not so if you have a Linux, Mac OS, or Windows computer, because you can use a little piece of software called Nmap. Amber, go ahead and go to this. They had their 15-year anniversary. This is software that has been around for a really, really long time. It works incredibly well, and this is how it works. If you go to my computer, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and bring up a command window, and I'm going to see what is my IP address. So right now I'm connected to a network at 10.135.249.220. So what I want is I want to find out what else is on this network with me. A little Zen map, thank you, come up. And I'm going to say scan everything from 10.135.249.220 all the way up to, .1 all the way up to, say, 200. And when I hit scan, after selecting a quick scan, what was that? There we go. What it's doing is it's going through that entire range. So it's starting at the top with 10.135.249.1 and all the way up to .200. And it's looking at every address, every port, every service. Now, it's not doing it in detail, but what I'll get when this is done is I'll get a quick map of all the devices that are on my network. It's a lot like Fing. It's working a little more slowly than Fing because it's actually looking a bit deeper. And that's what I like about this, because right now I've got it set for quick scan, but if I wanted to, I could do an intense scan. So, for example, here's what it found. There's these particular devices. Let's start with this one. How about 10.135.249.13? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to copy that and go, wait a minute, I don't know exactly what that device is.
I know what it is. It says right there.
Shh, we're pretending. Okay. If Patrick wasn't here, I wouldn't know what that device is. But then what I can do is I say, no, I want to know what services on that particular device are there. So I'm going to say intense scan all TCP ports. I'm going to scan just that device, and now it's giving me a deeper dive. So here we go. It's starting to come back. It's going to give me all the different services that might be open. Hopefully I've got nothing open on this because it is a public network. And by the time it gets done, I'll know whether or not the device is secure. I'll know whether or not the device has been compromised. I'll know whether or not the device is responding to calls from another device on my network. So that's another, again, free piece of software. You might as well get it. Have you used any of this kind of software on the iOS side?
Not lately. Not on iOS. Back when we set up our own AppleTalk network, I did use that in college, though. Something very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
And You know, it's similar to the war driving days, too, just checking out the wireless networks.
Yeah.
And seeing what's out
there. Albert, if you go back to my computer, I do want to show them one thing. This is something that you can do with Nmap, or actually they're calling it Zenmap. Zenmap is actually just the graphical user interface over Nmap, which was originally a command line program. It's doing a SYN stealth scan. This is what I like about it, because it's possible to stealth your device. You can make it basically look like it's not there. You can't hide from Zenmap, because Zenmap knows how that works, and it will still look for those particular devices. I love it. My favorite program. It's on every computer I ever carry with me. And it's probably the first one I break out anytime I connect to a new network, because when I first connect to a network, I want to know what's there. It's kind of like going outside of your house and just checking out the neighborhood, making sure everything's okay.
See if there's anything suspicious before you trust all your data.
Yeah, and actually, very, very good if you ever go to, say, a hotel. A lot of hotels will put everybody on their own VLAN. So you shouldn't see anything except you and maybe another device that's with you and the gateway. And so if you don't see just that, it means they didn't do that, which means everyone in the hotel can see your traffic.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty obvious when you connect to the hotel's network and you see shared drives show up. And I see that a lot. You probably do, too.
The funny thing is, you know on which clients I see that the most? On Apple clients.
Yeah.
On Macs.
Yeah, this is on my Mac.
It's the strangest thing. Because, you know, because they're all sharing with, like, their Time Machine or something. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're easily owned, but it means that they don't know what they're sharing when they go into a public network, which is kind of funny.
Well, so, a lot of them are locked down. You can't get in, but you just see them, which shows that, they're... Yeah. On the shared network.
It also lets me know that this might be something I should invest my time in, because maybe they have really weak security. Maybe they haven't patched and I can use an exploit.
Yeah.
Who knows? Also, if you look at the show notes for this episode, you're going to find I put a lot of simple command line commands in the show notes that you can copy and use. I showed you the graphical user interface because... basically, everyone's switching over to the GUI. I started with the command line. I love the command line. It's faster, but I understand why people like the GUI, because they've actually done a really good job. And you can save sessions rather than saving to a text file and then replay them later on, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. We've got another bit of feedback. This one comes from Michael, but I like the more exotic sounding name, so I'm going to say his name is Michel.
Well, Michael writes, I've made a recent post about using a Raspberry Pi as a Tor box, and I figured that I don't need the Tor part. So does anyone know how to turn a Raspberry Pi into a Wi-Fi router on Raspbian? Any support would be great.
Michelle, you are in luck, because we actually did the Tor Pi project not too long ago. And the fun thing about that is the first part of it is creating an access point. So before we turned it into a Tor router, the Onion router, we actually created an access point so that I can wirelessly access a wired network that is connected to my Raspberry Pi. And it's actually really simple. It's literally just downloading a repository from Git, running the repository, putting in your information, and you're done. But let's go ahead and show you. Right now on this table, if you go to the side view, this is the little LiPi case that I've been playing with. So it's a self-contained Raspberry Pi. It's got, look, I can actually remove this, and it keeps running because it has its own internal battery supply. So it's like a little UPS, which I kind of like. It's kind of cool.
I like the big buttons on the side.
Yeah. we're working on, I'm actually going to have to recess these because right now,
oh, you keep hitting it.
It's a little easy to hit. I brought this with me the last time I went to Las Vegas, and that on switch tends to just turn on.
Oh.
I'm going to have to recess that and cover it. But let's go ahead and show you how this works. So, Burke, if you would go ahead and move over to the Raspberry Pi input. Super simple instructions. All I have to do is, there you go. I've already copied over the commands that I'm going to be running just so I don't have to type them out, because that's really hard to do when you're trying to do it on air. I'm going to open up a terminal window, and I'm connected. My wired network is connected to the brick house right now. I'm going to run this first line. And so what this is doing, and this is asking my Raspberry Pi to clone a repository on Git. And Patrick, what's a repository?
It's a shared code.
Yeah. So all these people have decided, hey, I created this little project. I would love people to play with it. So I'm going to go ahead and do this, and it's going to clone it. And there we go. So what it's done right now is it's gone ahead and it's gone to that repository, and it's downloaded everything to my local storage. Now I need to go ahead and change into that directory, which is CD and then space and capital RPI, which is, you know, Raspberry Pi, and then wireless dash hotspot. So I'm going to put that here, and it's going to go ahead and change the directory to that. And now I'm just going to run sudo, I know that ticks people off, /install. And now what I'm doing is I'm installing the files that were in that repository.
As a super user.
So I'm going to go ahead and say, yes, go ahead and make some changes. I've already done some of the basic stuff that you do on a Raspberry Pi. I've changed the master password. I've expanded the volume, and I've reset the keyboard to be US. So what it's doing right now is it's looking through that script that was inside those install files, and it's saying, oh, these are the packages I need. So it's going out, and it's fetching all the packages. It's going to download all our software to the local storage, and once it's done, it's going to go ahead and run the configuration. When we did the Tor project on this, this was just the first step. And if you go back to that episode, you'll see that the way it worked was we had a tap on it. Mm-hmm. So that when we were using it as an access point, we could see all the traffic that was going to the tap. But then once we added the Tor layer, all the traffic was encrypted. So it just looked like nonsense.
Right.
That's how we did it last time. This time we're going to do the exact same process, except we're going to stop at the point before we install the Tor, the Onion router. So if you go back to that screen, there we go. We're getting the packages. It's going in and downloading. This will vary based on how fast your connection is. We've got a decent connection here at the Brick House, but it'll also vary on how many people are currently trying to access these files, because, folks, that's internet. Now, a few things that you're going to want to do when you do this, of course, install the latest version of Raspbian on an SD card. You're going to want to go to sudo raspi-config. That's going to allow you to change your master password. That's going to allow you to expand the volume, because when you first install Raspbian, sometimes it doesn't use up the entire SD card and you're just wasting space. Then you're going to want to turn it into an access point by running these commands that I just gave you. Once it's done installing, it's going to ask me to agree to terms. It's going to ask me if I want to use a pre-configured DNS server. It's going to ask me if I want to use the unblocked US DNS servers. And then it's going to ask me if I want to use the default configuration. And to that, I'm going to say no, because I actually want to create the access point. I want to create my own SSID. I want to create my own password.
Right.
Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and wait for that for just a bit. One of the cool things about this project is this goes right in with my LiPi, because this, I'm actually going to add a couple of USB devices to this so I can receive a wireless signal, then use that to repeat out to my devices, but securely.
Okay.
All right, so go back to that screen, Bert. You good? The Raspberry Pi? There you go. And actually, note, I'm going to increase the size here, because now we're getting to some fun stuff. And hold on. Wait, where's my...
That's not font size.
That's not font size. I don't want you. I want style. There we go. That's making it much bigger. How about 15 points?
16.
Sold. How does that look? There we go. You can see that, right? More or less. Okay. So now it's asking me if I want to use the pre-configured DNS servers. I'm going to say yes. Now it's asking me... Oh, wait, there we go. If I want to use the unblocked US DNS servers, I'm going to say yes. Now it's going to ask me if I want to use Wi-Fi defaults. Now, if I did use defaults, it would be a password of 0123456789A. Not great. SSID of Raspberry Pi Fi with channel 6. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, we can do better than that.
Instead, we're going to put super secure 1234. How about that? That's crazy, right? 1234. And my SSID.
That's almost my luggage combination.
My SSID is know-how. And I'm going to choose channel 11. And I am not using. I'm using a Raspberry Pi 3, so I don't need to use the Realtek chipset. If you have a Raspberry Pi 2 or below, you might be using a Realtek chipset and you would have to say yes. But I'm saying no. And do I want Chromecast support? No. And there we go. So what it's going to do now is it's going to go ahead and turn on the DHCP server. It's turning on the access point. And now it will take its wired connection and it will share it out over wireless. So it's going to go ahead and reboot. And once it reboots, this is automatically going to start up every time the Raspberry Pi goes. which is awesome. Now, I am doing a couple of configurations with my LiPi as soon as this thing boots up. There's actually going to be a button at the front for a gentle shutdown. So rather than just slamming the power, which we both know is a really good way to destroy storage on a Raspberry Pi, if you push that button, it does a graceful shutdown, and then you can go and turn off the power.
And save the state and all that.
All that good stuff. All right, so let's wait for it to boot up. And after it boots up, I'm going to show you on my mobile device that I've got a brand new access point. It's going to take a while because the Raspberry Pi isn't the fastest computer in the world. But as soon as it gets its wired connection, it should be really close to. It's almost there. Come on. Come on. Hello. And
again, it's not the fastest computer.
It's chugging. It's chugging. Hold on. Keep going.
Oh, it's blinking.
No, it's still loading up its own script. And actually, I just lost the wired connection.
What?
Well, okay, so it has nothing to share now, which is awesome. I think I must have plugged it into a bad jack.
Whoops.
I do that sometimes.
Well, if it was plugged into a good jack.
Now, you would see an access point called KnowHow with the SSID called KnowHow, and the password would be
1234.
Okay, and it's just going to take longer than I thought. So we'll come back to that in just a bit. Yeah. Now, here's the cool thing. If you want, you can do the entire Tor project. You can have the AP start up every single time you turn it on, but then you can add a script to the desktop so it only turns on the Tor part when you want. Now, if you're going to do that, what I would suggest is you follow us along with the LiPi project, because one of the lids, because these are interchangeable lids, will have a little screen, a little touch screen. So you can actually turn the thing on and then just say Tor or not Tor. So if you just want an AP and you want it to go as fast as possible, just let it go. If you want security, you hit Tor, and suddenly you're encrypted and your location is anonymized.
Yeah, good option there.
It's a fun option. Yeah. It's a fun option. So we'll get back to that as soon as it's finished priming. Now, in just a bit, Patrick, you know what we got?
Yeah.
We got more feedback. We got someone asking a question about a 3D printer, and we've got a report from CES 2018, which is amazing, since that requires a little time travel because, you know, never mind.
Yeah.
Those who watch the show, you understand what I'm talking about. But before we get to that, let's take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of KnowHow. Now, folks, I understand that you like your electronics. We all do. I mean, they're fun and they're productive and they add something to our lifestyle, our digital lifestyle. But what's not fun is when we lose them. What's not fun is when they kind of wander away. What's not fun is when we can't find them. Only if there was a technological solution, something that used the gear that we already carry, that would allow me to make sure that all of my stuff stays within my reach. Well, that's not a dream. That's the Tracker. Now, this episode of KnowHow is brought to you by Tracker. We are all looking for something. Love, purpose, unforgettable experience, but mostly our keys, our phones, our little doodads. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. And now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you never worry about losing your things again, because Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You just place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, be it your keys, your wallet, your remote, and it's small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you do misplace an item, it's not if, but when, Tracker Pixel lets you find where it is. You just go to the Tracker app on your smartphone, you press a button, and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so that you can find your items in the dark. Now, if you lose your phone, believe it or not, you can actually do this backwards. You just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone rings, even if it's on silent. You can even locate your item if it's miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. What that means is, as long as your Tracker is within range of another Tracker user, you can still get notifications, even if you're in San Francisco and your item ended up in Tokyo. And Tracker's 30-day back money guarantee means that you have nothing, nothing to lose. Now, we want you to go to thetracker.com/knowhow to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com/knowhow for 20% off. thetracker.com/knowhow. And we thank Tracker for their support of KnowHow. All right, Patrick, we've got another question. This time it's about 3D printers. Specifically, yes. You know, I'm a fan of the Monoprice series. Not the best printers on the planet, but they're at a price point that allows people to come into the hobby.
Yes.
You've got the Plus. Yes, I've also got a Plus. I kind of prefer the version 2, even though it's a little slower. I've had a bit more reliability out of it. But we got a question from Heath Reeder, who has a problem I think a lot of us have had.
All right. Heath writes, so I got my Monoprice Maker Select Plus and did a print with the filament that came with it, but I'm having trouble with the Hatchbox filament I got. I started a print, left, and when I came back, no print was on the build plate. I checked for jams and noticed a worn spot on the side of the filament. It looked like the wheel was trying to push the filament through the hot end, but it wasn't going. Thanks for any tips.
This is something everyone has experienced at least once. Well, first, you had something to say about going away.
He starts the print and walks away. I at least wait until I can see that it's going to take to the plate. Otherwise, you can walk back and you end up seeing just spaghetti all over the place.
There's a whole meme about first layer Tron. It's basically when the first layer goes down perfectly, it's kind of nice. Now, if you've got your printer dialed in, like I've got my printers, I feel fine just walking away because I know it's going to stick and I know it's set up properly. But even I have a camera that it goes between the three different printers I have, and it's a little browser on my desktop window, so I know that they're going. It's a good practice at least to see if the first couple of strands are going to stick to the build plate.
Yeah.
But what he is experiencing is something else, and that is what happens when your hot end isn't hot enough. You see, the way that the filament feeder works is there's just a little wheel. It's like a ridged wheel. The filament is pushed down by that wheel into the hot end. Well, the problem is if the hot end isn't hot enough to melt the filament, then it can't go anywhere. And it increases the resistance. And eventually that wheel, because it has no idea that the filament is stuck, it will just strip the side of the filament.
Right.
And once it's stripped, it's not going anywhere. And it will do the entire print. So it will do the motions of doing the entire print, but nothing will actually stick to the surface. Very, very typical. Don't feel bad about that. Here's the thing, though. This defaults, and most of the printers will default, to about 200 degrees Celsius. That will work in most cases. However, if your build area is too cold, or if you've got a filament that's kind of slightly wonky, 200 degrees is kind of on the edge. And all it takes is a quick drop in temperature. A breeze comes through the room, whatever it might be, and suddenly you are below the melting temperature, and now it's going to strip.
Right.
A lot of people have actually seen this in the middle of prints because it's going too fast, and you've sucked up all the heat from the hot end, and now it's done. And then after that, it does get warm enough to extrude again, but because you've already worn that groove in the side of the filament, nothing's going to happen. If you take a look, go to the side view here, Burke. There are a couple of ways to deal with this. If you are in the middle of a print, so this is already heated up. The hot end is at 200 degrees. The bed is at 60 or 59 degrees. You can actually, if you go ahead and hit DEB, hit Deb, you get the ability to manually change your temperatures. So if you notice that it's struggling, you can hear the stepper motor is like skipping a little bit. You can actually bump up the EAD temp. And it will increase the temperature on the hot end. I typically like to go with about 210 degrees. That's sort of my sweet spot there. And there you go. That will fix it. Unfortunately, if you do it here, you will have to do it every single time you print. And you can't do it at the start of the print because after the first layer goes down, this actually resets. Because it thinks it's doing the raft first and then it's going to the real temperature. So you'd have to do it twice. Don't do that. That's bad. There is another way, and it's a much better way, and that's actually to do it from the software you're using for slicing. If you go to my computer, Burke, this is Cura. This is what I use to slice. So once I've got my object, whatever it is that I've designed, it goes into this program, and it allows me to figure out exactly what I want to do with it. A lot of people will use the recommended settings. So you do want it hollow, do you want it light, do you want it dense, do you want it solid? That is good for most prints. However, if you are having problems with your print, if you're having that issue where you're gouging out the side of the filament, what you want to do is go to custom, and under material, you can actually set the temperature of the hot end, and you can set the temperature of the bed if you've got a heated bed. What's nice about this is this will take from the get-go. So this is actually built into the information that the slicer puts onto your little card that you're going to plug into your printer. Obviously, much better. I would only do it manually if you're in the middle of a print, like especially a long print, and you're starting to hear those early warning signs of, oh, something's not going right. Otherwise, set for 210 inside of your slicing software, and you should be good.
All right. And will Kira keep this as a default, or do you have to reset it every time?
Yes, it will keep it as a default.
Oh, that's handy, too.
Yeah, which is really, really nice. One thing to also be aware of, because he didn't specifically mention what kind of filament he's using. Mm. Different filaments have different melting temperatures, and it's always on the box, unless it's a really, really bad filament. and it will tell you, set this for 200 degrees, or set this for 210, or set it for 220. Like ABS, I'm more comfortable 220, 225. There are some soft filaments that I use that melt at like 140 degrees, but those are specialty. It's like the foam stuff
that
you print and then it dissolves so that you can have support that just goes away.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. Mess around with your temperatures. You should be just fine. This is your printer.
This is yours.
No,
it is.
This one, no.
I recognize.
I want you to print. Yeah, actually, this is mine because this one's working.
I know it's yours. I told you.
Now, folks, we've got a special treat for you. In case you didn't know, there's actually a big event going on right now in Las Vegas. It's CES, which used to be known as the Consumer Electronics Show, but now it's just CES. They don't want to have consumer or electronics in the name. Or show, because evidently that's weird. But it is the largest collection of gadgets and gizmos in the world. About 500,000 people will descend on this poor little town of Sin City, and we will look at what are essentially the next generation of technology. So what we thought we would do is just take you on a quick behind-the-scenes tour of CES 2018. CES. Those three letters bring out a storied history of the consumer electronics world. For more than 50 years, vendors from around the planet have gathered to show off their wares to industry insiders, the media, and more recently, the men and women whose lives are intimately shaped by the technologies that come out of these hallowed halls. But CES isn't just a showcase for the newest technologies, nor a petri dish for the next big thing. CES is a temporary city built for upwards of 200,000 attendees and 4,000 vendors. It's a place where the youngest startups can share the same air as the multinational conglomerate. In essence, CES is a melting pot of tech. If you've watched any CES coverage this year, you probably already know about LG's foldable screen, HP's big monitor, and the newest from the large manufacturers in home theater and consumer electronics. But I wanted to take you down a different route this year. I want to show you some of the vendors who aren't getting a lot of press. The companies who have great technologies, but small marketing budgets. The tinkerers and inventors who put some of the crazy into CES. So let's go. One of my first stops was to DisplayLink. They've created a lagless, tetherless, wireless pack that's compatible with any VR headset. They're the inventors of the USB to video adapter, and they've used their expertise to make a truly ingenious accessory for VR. I mean, why get the untethered option for just one headset when you can support them all? Of course, I had to stop by a few of the drone exhibitors, and CES 2018 has managed to one-up CES 2017 with far more designs and purpose-built multi-rotor craft than last year. There were law enforcement drones, AI drones, fixed-wing craft, and even underwater ROVs.
We are the Sway Pro Technology. We are the pioneers of the waterproof drone. It is all-weather drone. It can use it for the rescue, for photography, or even can monitoring the life wares of the daily life. We attached a lot of fantastic mechanisms like payload release. And with the focus camera, we can deliver the life force or water or some other stuff to the long distances.
Of course, with my penchant for rapidly disassembling high-speed multi-rotor craft, I had to stop by the UVify booth to check out their micro-racing drones.
UVify is a creator of a lot of racing drones. The one we're releasing here at CES is called the Uri. which is basically a little micro racing drone that you can take out into the field or into your even in your living room and fly around. It's a really fast micro drone, probably one of the fastest in the world, and it's really easy to fly. Starter kit starts at about $289, about pre-order right here at CES, and about $389 after CES.
Strangely enough, the most interesting drone tech I saw wasn't a new type of craft, but a new type of controller. Shift has created a one-handed control that does away with the dual-stick transmitters most of us know and love. The Shift isn't for us, but for those with brains not wired for dual-stick operation, this might be a way to get into drones without having them fly away, or into walls, or into the ocean. Vehicle tech was big again. Multiple vendors brought out service platforms, new electric powertrains, and more than a few comprehensive sensor packages. But I found two little-known companies that have tech that are destined to become commonplace. The first is Gentex. They make a full display mirror that replaces the standard rearview mirror in your vehicle. In its normal mode, it works like any rearview mirror, but flip it up and it becomes a full display, able to show a backup camera, GPS, or any other data you might need. You might have never have heard of the device, but it's already been used by the Nismo racing team, so it's got some serious real-world pedigree behind it. Gentex also makes several biometric products that can identify the driver via a retinal scan that takes just a few seconds. Imagine a vehicle that can confirm who's driving it, then switch to the right profiles for driver preferences, toll transponders, and the like. The second company with tech ready to change the industry is Koito. They've created a semi-solid-state LiDAR technology. You've probably seen traditional LiDAR sensors rotating cylinders that sweep the areas around a vehicle to give the onboard electronics a way to see what's out there. The tech works well, but it's unsightly, easy to damage, and not really tenable in the long term. Koito has combined a LiDAR emitter and receiver with MEMS to create a non-rotating LiDAR beam that can fit into headlights and taillights. Essentially, it's a LiDAR using the same mirror technology in DLP projectors. Koito can fully sense what's around a vehicle with six assemblies, and you'd never know they're there. Of course, the sensor package is an important part of any autonomous vehicle technology, but you also need a company that can explain what they're going to do with that sensor package technology. That's why I applaud Ford, who uses it to deliver pizza.
So what we have behind me right now is a Ford Domino's delivery vehicle that we did some trialing with in earlier this fall. It was a great opportunity for us to demonstrate what the technology could do in terms of enabling a business to be more efficient about what they do. Of course, it's technology, and that's what the Consumer Electronics Show is all about. So we wanted to bring it here and give people a sense, with all the attendees from around the world, what we've been working on and will be working on over the next several years.
Now, we can't have a CES without at least one company trying to save the world, and this time, I found them in the Sands Expo. Wandering the Sands, I ran into Zeros Technologies and their washing efficiency green earth technologies. Put simply, they figured out a way to increase the number of contaminants that are pulled out of laundry while reducing the amount of water and power required for a cycle by up to 50%. Oh, and it does it all while keeping plastic fibers from contaminating our water. This magic is enabled by three Zeros technologies. The X-Orb are small polymer beads that are mixed into the wash at the start of the wash cycle. Their motion increases agitation in the wash and are naturally charged, which tends to pull contaminants out of the clothes. The X-Drum looks like a regular drum and agitator until you look closely and realize that there are screw drives in each lifter. These drives add the X-Orbs to the wash, then reverse and remove them once the load is finished. The cycle is finished with the X-Filtra, a centrifugal pump with a 32-micron screen mesh filter that collects the plastic fibers shed by synthetic clothes before they make it into the sewer. Together, they reduce the amount of water, power, and detergent needed for a cycle, prevent plastic waste, and it's actually better for your clothes. They call it the future of laundry, and unlike a lot of other CES boasts, they might be right. Their tech is already in use by large players like Hilton and Universal Studios, so it's not a matter of if this tech will make it into your home, but when. While some companies are trying to save the planet with green tech, others are trying to destroy it with advanced AI. Just kidding. But the idea of face-recognizing, self-driving Yamaha motorcycles is pretty Skynet.
We're here at CES for the first time for Yamaha. We're very excited. We're showing two incredible motorcycles using advanced robotics. One is Motobot version 2. We'll go 200 kilometers per hour. and the other one is an incredible Motoroid. Just like the olden days with a horse, when you call it to come to you, Motoroid has advanced facial technology that will come to you when you call it. It's incredible.
NVIDIA was the big dog in the AI landscape with a solid push into autonomous vehicle tech that uses their advances in GPU power.
We're here at the NVIDIA booth showing all the different AI building blocks we have for autonomous cars. You're seeing things like simulation, where I can do hyperspeed simulation, so I can do a million miles overnight of testing to make sure that cars are really safe to be on the road autonomously. I'm showing the different drive stack development tools and modules that we give to customers, whether it's path planning, object detection, pedestrian detection, all those things are things that people factor into their cars. And we want to basically help our customers get their autonomous cars on the road.
Of course, AI has nothing on I, as in human intelligence, which is why I was fascinated by two companies I found that have created products to use human brainwaves. The first is Muse. Last year, they created their first generation headset, basically an EEG and a headband, that when paired with an app, trained you in meditation. This year, they've refined their design. Doing away with the clunky, easy-to-break, hard-to-pack first-gen headset, they've actually managed to fit all their tech into a pair of sunglasses. You have to look really hard to see the tech, but it works. If you've ever wanted to take a short, mind-centering meditation break, the Muse is perfect for you. But what if you wanted to do something else with your brainwaves? That's where you could use BrainCo and Brain Robotics. They've taken the EEG tech and used it to give humans control over robots, prosthetic limbs, and have even developed a teacher's aid that will tell you if you've lost the attention of your students. Now, to be honest, there was a lot of Internet of Things at CES, though I have to say that walking through those demos just made me think that we're paying to install security exploits into our home networks. The connected lifestyle offers many advantages, but just slapping connectivity on a device and calling it IoT isn't for the Twit Army. That's why I'm glad I found one device that I thought was designed properly and worthy of our under-the-radar look at CES. Guardian is a company that makes a leak prevention kit that can detect leaks and shut off water valves automatically while notifying you over your mobile device. It has a few important advantages over similar systems I've seen. First, it doesn't require you to do any plumbing. No cutting, soldering, or replacement of valves. It just clips over your existing valve. Second, the leak detectors use low-power RF that allows them to last 7 years on a single charge. Third, their IoT is notification-only, so you don't have to worry about someone commandeering your IoT device and shutting off your water mains. Of course, sometimes you just need to lose yourself in the gadgets, and there were gadgets aplenty at CES 2018. Here's a very small sampling. The Cauldron is a thermos bottle with multiple twists. The original Cauldron was relatively simple. Take a vacuum container, add a heating element, control unit, and a battery, and enjoy your beverages as hot or cold as you desire. But the engineers thought, what else can we do with that power pack? And the result was the Cauldron 2.0, a modular system of interchangeable pieces designed for glamping. Want coffee? Combine the power unit with a control unit and a thermos, and you've got a perfect cup, just before boiling. Want to blend? Remove the control unit, drop a blender attachment on the battery, and you're good to go. Want a camping light? Well, you get the idea. And while you're glamping, why not stop by Anker and pick up the capsule? This is their new Pico projector with a 360-degree sound system running Android. We reviewed their larger Nebula, which was an awesome portable projector for about $600, and this little unit runs half the price and has the power to last a full-length movie. If you need a bit more power for your glamping, Anker also has the Powerhouse, a $500 434-watt-hour power monster with AC-DC output and enough juice to power a mini-fridge or a blacked-out CES. This is just the start of Twitch CES coverage. We've invited dozens of companies to send us their gear to see how they hold up in the real world. Till then, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit, reporting on CES 2018 for Twit TV.
Wow, that was an amazing thing that we just saw.
Oh, so cool.
And we're totally not pre-recording this, so I have no idea what actually went into the segment.
So much stuff.
Yeah,
so much
time travel. So, wow, it's so Doge. So that thing with the lights.
Oh, yeah. And right? The other thing, I can't believe that. I can't wait to have that.
It's amazing. Oh. It's amazing. Folks, we're going to be bringing you more in-depth from CES. I've actually recorded a bunch of stuff, at least I think I did, which will be rolling into future know-how episodes. You know, it's kind of fun because CES is one of these events that the Technorati go to every year. We complain about it every year. We have fun. And then at the end of every event, we say, I'm never coming back.
Yeah.
And then every year we do.
And also, I'm sorry that you're sick now.
I'm very sick. Actually, right now, I am incredibly, I've probably picked up the plague and the swine flu and the avian flu at the same time, because that's what you do at CES.
Yeah, CES, one person goes that's sick, everybody leaves sick.
Yeah, indeed. Now, Patrick, they probably noticed that our desk has changed a little bit.
Yeah, always.
We've got a little mechanized violence here. I'm sorry for those people who this is going to hurt their sensibilities, but I had to do this. I found a little something-something during Christmas time that was a deal, and I like modding things, and so I picked up myself a Nerf gun. You've got some old laser tag stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to be taking a look at this in just a bit, because we got to do this all know-how style.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get there, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Know-How. Now, folks, earlier we were talking about wireless access points, and we know that we can turn a Raspberry Pi into an AP. In fact, I can turn my laptop into an AP. There's so many things that I could do to put wireless energy into the air. The question is, can I create a device, or can I have a device? Can I buy a device that will do that efficiently? Efficiency is the name of the game in Wi-Fi, and that's why we're so happy to have Eero as a sponsor of Know-How. Now, Eero allows you to install an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes. You simply download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device, and it will walk you through each step of the process. It's like having a tutor in front of you. It's quick, it's easy, it's painless. You can easily create and share a guest network, know how many devices are connected at any given point, and check the internet speed that you're getting from your service provider. Now, Eero is protected with state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption, but more importantly, they stand by their product. Within 24 hours of the cracked Wi-Fi vulnerability revelation, Eero automatically pushed out a fix to all of their customers. Their incredibly fast response time and ability to push out those updates automatically sets Eero apart from other solutions and traditional routers. Now, this isn't just Eero. This is second-generation Eero and the Eero Beacon. Eero home Wi-Fi system started in early 2016. Since then, they've learned from hundreds of thousands of systems, making them smarter, faster, and more reliable. The new Eero second generation and Eero Beacon allows a customer to build a Wi-Fi system that's more perfectly tailored to their home than ever before. They offer more speed and range in the same high-quality, elegant design that people have come to expect. And with the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio, the second-generation Eero is now tri-band and twice as fast as its predecessor, which lets customers do more simultaneously in every room in their home. And with the addition of the new Thread radio, Eero can even connect to low-power devices such as locks, doorbells, and other sensors, and more. You can expand your coverage in any room just as easily as plugging one into a wall. You just hook up your beacon, and you've got more coverage. And you can add as many Eero beacons as you want. If there's an outlet, there's Wi-Fi. For free overnight shipping in the United States or Canada, visit Eero.com and at checkout select overnight shipping. Then enter know-how to make it free. That's Eero.com and enter the code know-how. And we thank Eero for their support of know-how. Okay, Patrick, so we've got some toy weaponry here. Let's start with mine, because mine's easy.
Okay.
Mine's easy.
Start so, present day.
Present day. Present day. This is, okay. On Walmart, they had a sale. I got two of these for $20 a pop. And we do kind of every once in a while, a Nerf war does break out here at the Brick House.
We've got a
drawer, and sometimes people are frustrated and they need to shoot people. So why not shoot them with soft pellets? Now, here's the thing. This is an automatic. So if you push down the trigger, you can just keep firing. And it's got this massive, almost comically large magazine that's incredibly difficult to load.
With 40 little Nerf balls.
40 little Nerf balls, and it's not great to reconnect. But what I thought I could do is I could take this and I could modify it, you know-how style. Now, here's the cool thing about this. If you look at the top, this is actually the battery compartment. It requires 6 D-cell batteries.
That's a lot of power.
That's a lot of power, but more importantly, it gives us a place where we can put all the devices that we want for our mod. The first thing we're going to want to do is we're going to want to dump those D-cells, because D-cells are expensive. You have to buy them, and they're not rechargeable. So if there are six D-cell batteries, and I know every D-cell battery is 1.5 volts, I know that this is going to take 9 volts. That's the voltage it wants. I have power cells that are a fourth of this size that will provide more than 9 volts. And then what I can do is I can use the rest of the space to put an Arduino. I can add a couple of little features. What I was thinking about doing is, first of all, I'm going to have a way to have the rechargeable battery to sort of slap in. But then it's also going to include a targeting laser. Come on, man. Everyone wants a targeting laser on their rifle. It's going to have a targeting laser. And I'm also going to put in an IR beacon on the front so I can actually use this as a laser tag rifle as well.
Laser tag, you say?
Laser tag. So this one's super simple. Oh, by the way, I'm going to do one more thing. There's going to be a little device I'm 3D printing for the back here that will allow me to go from the 9-volt standard up to 12 volts. So I can just, if I want a little bit more range, a little bit more speed, just kind of overvolt the rifle and go.
And then you're going to replace the little balls with hard ones. And
no, I don't want to hurt people, Patrick. Come
sometimes
on.
You do.
No way.
Grenade launcher.
And Burke wants a grenade launcher. So that's my mod. My mod is relatively simple. Basically, I'm just going to take away the non-rechargeable batteries, add a laser for giggles, and then maybe a little bit of an IR beacon at the front. You've got something that I think is way more interesting. Tell me about this.
It's not even a mod. Well, first we'll go back in time 20 years to 1997. I can't believe that's 20 years ago. Tiger Electronics had the laser tag brand, and they made these laser tag guns.
Which are horrible. I'm sorry. No, I mean, look.
The classic, the original from 1986, if we go back 30 years.
I remember this thing.
These were
all
the rage
so
in 86. There was a cartoon series. They made a series of these starlights. There was a rifle, different sensors, hats, and vests.
You have to remember, at the time, we had TV series like Battlestar Galactica and movies like Logan's Run. And they had weapons that looked like this. This was the sci-fi gun, and people just wanted one.
This was just as Next Generation was coming out.
Oh, heck yes. Yeah.
And so for people that don't know, with this laser tag from Worlds of Wonder, there's this star sensor. Let me turn it on. And so you would wear it, and when you get 6 hits, you're out.
Wait. Wow, this is, like, really cheating. Hey, wait.
Yeah, I'll just stand here and get
and
hit.
Bye, Patrick.
I'm killed.
Okay, I know that this looks stupid, but look, this was an era before AR, before VR. This was an era before first-person shooters.
Yeah.
This was before airsoft. This was before paintball. This was fun.
Yeah. There was a cartoon series, and the ads were amazing with Stadium not included. But the thing is, this is just infrared. And this is essentially the same as your TV remote.
And actually, let's prove
there's
that.
There's no laser here at
so
all.
Why don't you take this little gun? Now, you may remember this. This is something I made a while back. This is actually just an infrared package that I created for some future episodes. If you go to the side view, future episodes of Know How. On this side, I've got this is actually a receiver. And down there, that's an emitter. And there's an Arduino inside so that I can read the code. So, Patrick, if you go ahead and shoot that sensor, there we go. Now, if you could go to my computer, Burke, there you go. My computer, there we go. Go shoot it again. And keep shooting it. There we go. So what you're seeing is this is actually the data that's coming out of the end of the gun. Now, Patrick, notice anything about these numbers?
They seem to be random, except for the one that comes every so often with all Fs.
F, right? That's the repeat code. That's because the library that I'm using is not set up to read the codes out of that. However, the original laser tag was essentially a remote control.
Yeah.
It was a remote control with a slightly more powerful LED than a remote control.
You could read these with learning remotes, and the remote would send out the code from the gun.
Precisely. So what we need to do is, as we do this project, we're going to figure out exactly what language this is speaking. Because right now I have the setup to read Panasonic, Sony, and JVC remotes. Well, I just need to find out what language that's speaking, switch the library, and now I'll be able to get the same code every single time.
Yeah.
However, you want to show them what happens
do
this?
The 90s version from Tiger Electronics, they have the sensor on the gun so that you can't just hide.
Yeah.
That was always a problem.
This is how I was playing laser tag. No!
Yeah. And you shoot over your shoulder so that...
Yeah.
Not yeah, fair. And that's and so they got around it by putting the sensor on the gun, but they also changed the electronics inside.
Yes,
these two
did.
Systems are not compatible, even though they're both laser tag registered trademark.
Right. So if you go go back to my computer.
So I'll shoot the sensor here, and we'll see what happens.
Huh? Huh? Wait a minute. Huh? That's
Let
weird.
Me do the
What's
burst.
Going on, Patrick?
Yeah, nothing I'm doing is triggering that sensor.
And that's because when they switched, and this is why the two versions are incompatible, this is essentially a remote control. So it is sending out a value. We don't have the right library to read that value, but it is still a value. That, you did a little bit of research, and you figured out it's not sending out a code.
No. They've actually applied for a patent, and that's where I found all the information on this. It's doing a different frequency. And it's looking, because they want it to work better in daylight, which was always a problem with the original laser tag, they have it look for a, I believe it's a 25 millisecond sequence.
Yep.
And it can sort that out from the background noise of daylight to be able to tell this is the signal from the gun.
Essentially, what they've done is they're using a slightly different frequency on the IR LED, which means I'd have to change the receiver and the transmitter on my device so that it reads that. And then it's not sending out a value. It's basically sending out pulses, and it's looking for the recognition of those pulses. Now, we could still do that. If I swap out the receiver to the one with the same frequency as these IR LEDs, then what we could do is just read the binary. So we're not looking for a value anymore. We're looking for a pattern.
Yeah, and off and on.
There we go. Yep. On, off, off,
and does
on.
It stay on for the certain amount of time? And
precisely.
Then...
But Patrick, there's a reason why we're reading these codes. There's a reason why we're doing this. Well, what is that?
Because we can do stuff with it. We're not going to hack the guns, but we're going to have a way for the gun to be able to trigger different things.
Yeah. But we have a couple of ideas. The first one was super simple. It's basically an IR grenade. It would be a little device about this big with an Arduino stamp in it and LEDs on all sides. You would just toss it, and on impact, it has a little accelerometer. It would start emitting the codes, the shot code. So anyone in the area will just get grenaded.
Yep.
Yeah.
The other idea is we could have the sensor with a Raspberry Pi or something, and then when you shoot it, it triggers if this, then that, and could do any number of things. It could make you tweet whenever you hit the target.
It's a remote control. Or, you know, if you wanted to do the arena thing, we could actually have lights that will switch to the color of that team. So we can reprogram the guns so each one has a unique code. Mm. So I shoot the light, and now it's red. He shoots a light, now it's blue. And you can play Capture the Flag that way. The coolest one we were thinking of is we're doing quadcopters again. And we were thinking about maybe equipping a quadcopter with one of these little packages. They're super light.
Yeah. Not only could you just have, like, skeet shooting where you're hitting a moving, flying target.
They'll drop out of the sky.
Yeah. I suppose you could have it so you hit it and it cuts power. That might be expensive to fix.
Well, I use the small ones, the mostly indestructible ones.
But the other idea you had, and I love this, is where you hit it and it changes directions depending on which team hits it. So you can try to, like, move the target back and forth.
Even with that, I mean, what you could do, if you didn't want to do a quadcopter, it's super simple to set up like a, what would essentially be a laundry line with like a little device.
Oh, yeah.
And it just moves it back and forth. So in addition to trying to shoot the opposition, you're also trying to nail that target so it keeps moving towards your goal. So this is kind of bringing back nostalgia for us. I love the 80s. I love these devices. I remember the commercials making me want to buy these things and never being able to own them as a kid. Now, not only can we own them, we can make them.
Yeah. And I can't believe after 30 years... No, this is mine.
I didn't like that
this
one.
Is mine.
That's better.
30 years, I found a use for this.
I know, right?
Beyond just running out in a field with friends from college. And
I was never able to afford those as a kid. And by the time I had wealth...
Christmas 86 was amazing. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Thanks, man. Thanks. That's real nice. Appreciate that. folks, we know that this has been a lot of information. We're going to put everything in our show notes. It's step-by-step instructions for turning your Raspberry Pi into an AP. We've got everything you need to know about CES. We've got the links for the little my favorite kind of filaments for your filament problems. And, of course, we've also got the Nmap links and the Nmap commands. You're going to find that all at our show page. Where is that, Patrick?
That's at twit.tv/KH. We'll also put the link to the patent for the laser tag.
There you go. As long as you're there, why not also subscribe? This is the best way to support the show. If you want us to keep doing know-how, if you want us to expand, you can get an audio, a video, or a high-definition video version of the show automatically into your device of choice every single week. It's also a really good way to share it with your friends. Let's share the know-how love, y'all. That's kind of what we do. Of course, that's not the only place you're going to find us. You're going to find us on the socials. Specifically on Google Plus. Just go to Google Plus, look for know-how, ask to be added. It's just a precaution to keep out the spam accounts. But once you're in, you get access to almost 12,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls. People on every step of their maker journey. You can ask questions. You can answer questions. You can share your knowledge. You can post pictures. We'll bring your stuff into the show. Again, Google Plus, look for know-how.
Yep.
Yeah, but we're also on the tweeters?
The Twitter.
We're tweeting.
Social media.
What do you tweet?
I'm at twitter.com/pdelahanty.
And you're going to find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. And you're going to find Burke. We've got Burke or Dirk. He's our TD today. You're going to find him at twitter.com/ANELF3.
Yep, definitely right? Burke, not somebody else.
Stuffy Burke. Yeah, say hi. In fact, go to ANELF3 and say hello, Burke. Seriously, just do that. You will make my week. Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And now that you know how...
Plays the stadium now.